listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. It's your pet. Health matters. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Welcome to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. I'm Dr. Diane Levitan, speaking with you today about important information for all pet owners. Swine flu, your pets, and you. As you may have heard, there's now recent proof that not only can pigs, birds, and people be infected with this flu virus, but also that our pets are susceptible to it as well. What does this mean to pet owners, sick individuals, veterinary medicine, and public health? Will there be widespread panic now? How serious is this? Are there other shared viruses or germs we should be concerned about? We're all concerned and have many questions. And fortunately, we have an expert with us today, Dr. Kimberly May from the American Veterinary Medical Association, who will explain what swine flu is and answer these and many other very important questions about swine flu or H1N1, including why the name should probably be changed. We're going to be hearing from her with all those answers right after these messages.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Pawfume Dog Grooming and Finishing Spray is proud to be a new sponsor of Pet Life Radio. Pawfume Super Long Lasting Sprays are available in four unique fragrances. Each Pawfume spray is fortified with the finest conditioners and detanglers to make combing out your dog more fun. Pawfume retails for only $2 per 6-ounce bottle. Pawfume is available nationwide at all Dollar General and Family Dollar stores. Why pay more to have your dog smell great? Pawfume, Pawfume.
This valuable information comes from your pet. There's nothing like a wagging tail or friendly paw to lift your mood. They're therapeutic and make us feel good. Studies show pets even reduce stress, prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and fight depression. So there you have it. Pets are a daily dose of good health and happiness. Pets add life. To learn more, visit petsaddlife.org.
Hello! I'm Deborah Wolf, and I'm inviting you to my animal party on Pet Life Radio. The dress code? Come as you are. Pajamas, a tux, you can even go naked like your pets. Unleash your party animal at my animal party. Guests you know from Animal Planet, TV, radio, the news, and bookstores will be joining me. And that's because after I won Best Pet Radio in America from the DWAA, I got my paw on the door and I met a lot of amazing people. And the best of the best are going to be coming to the party. They're coming to party with us. So join us at the animal party. Don't miss the party.
Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
We're back, and I'm Dr. Diane Levitan, and you're listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Does your hair stand up when you hear H1N1 or swine flu? Do you think of SARS or avian flu? Well, you may fear you'll get it, but did you ever worry that your pets might get it? Our important guest today is Dr. Kimberly May, a veterinary specialist and an assistant director of professional and public affairs of the American Veterinary Medical Association, really our authority on all of things veterinary medicine. Dr. May is here to answer our questions and really to allay our fears with regard to the impact of H1N1 on our families, our pets, and in our communities. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having us on and helping us spread the word.
I know our listeners really want to know so much, but just tell us, what exactly is swine flu?
Well, swine flu is actually, it's a very unfortunate name, and although everyone's trying to get people to stop using it because it's technically not swine flu, it's still going to get that name. This version of it, which is officially being called 2009 pandemic H1N1 influenza, or sometimes just 2009 H1N1, is actually a combination of not just swine flu, but swine, human, and bird flus, and several different types that have all, they've all come together and made this new virus that is being called swine flu, but really is not the same as the real swine flu.
So it's a mix of all different viruses?
It's a mix of at least four different different viruses, yes. Swine flus from North America and some avian flus from Europe and human flus. So they all got together and made one kind of basically a new flu virus.
So it's sort of got stuck with the name swine flu, but essentially it's a totally different virus at this point in time.
It is. It got called swine flu initially because it types out as H1N1, which is swine flu, but this is a different one. So although it's H1N1, it is genetically different from the real swine flu virus. I know it gets a little confusing.
So do we need to worry about the real swine flu virus still?
The real swine flu virus has been going around for a while, and it generally is just transmitted among pigs. It's kind of been going around. Nobody really thought about it much until it combined with these other viruses and became this new virus. Now, all of a sudden, everybody worries about it, but it's been around. We have vaccines for the old type of swine flu, so it's not something that has been an alarming virus. It's just something that swine veterinarians and swine producers have dealt with for years now.
So what do we know about the 2009 H1N1 virus?
We know that it is it's a very unique virus in some ways, but it also may be showing us the future of flu viruses. Generally, flu viruses have always been thought to stick with a species, maybe one, you know, maybe two species, but generally we always thought of it as people get people flu and dogs get dog flu and birds get bird flu and horses get horse flu. And between the H5N1 bird flu and this one, they've crossed a few species barriers that are, when you look at it, go, you know, they were kind of a little surprising in the beginning, but this may be a trend for influenza viruses. We don't know for sure. But we've seen two of them now that have crossed more than one species barrier, really, with this one infecting, we've had poultry, we've had humans, we've had pigs, we've had cats, we've had ferrets. And you could class the cheetah as still a cat, but not a domestic cat. So we've definitely had some species barrier crossed. And then there are some reports from China of dogs possibly infected. We're still looking into that.
Unbelievable. So this virus is the one that people are getting today, commonly going through elementary schools and through nursing homes and places like that. And it's the same virus that our pets are potentially able to get now. Is that correct?
Yeah, it certainly is. So far, the good news is that we're infecting our pets. None of the cases of pets being ill with H1N1 have come from the pet got it from another pet or the pet picked it up the environment and gave it to the people. It has been the people were sick in the house either a week or a few days before, and the pet comes down with a respiratory problem. They go to a veterinarian, and H1N1 is diagnosed.
So how is it that our pets can get H1N1?
Most likely it's the contact, just like with people. I mean, closer contact, secretions. I mean, you know, you've got a runny nose when you got the flu. You're coughing, you're sneezing. You're basically spreading this virus like crazy. And when people are sick, they look for the comfort. You know, their family members are probably isolating themselves a little bit to try to keep from spreading it, but the pet is always there and always willing to get that attention and snuggle up with you on the bed or the sofa or the chair or whatever. And so people are having very close contact with their pets, plus they're home and not at work, so they've got more contact with them. And we're getting, what's probably happening is that, you know, they'll sneeze or they'll either sneeze directly on their pet or cough on them, and so they could be infecting them that way, or it could be just from handling them and having this stuff on your hands that they're getting infected.
Now, I won't call it swine flu anymore. I'm going to call it 2009 H1N1 flu is so common in people, and we see it so much, and there is this pandemic or this incredible increase in numbers of this flu around the United States. Why aren't we seeing it more in pets?
It may be that it is going on more and we're just starting now to recognize it. We don't know the real numbers. Cats have respiratory diseases that go around. It's not uncommon to have a cat that has a sniffly nose or something like that. So it's not necessarily that you think immediately, oh, H1N1. Veterinarians are more aware now that if they have an animal coming in that there was a person in the house that had H1N1, they're going to be maybe a little more suspicious of it. Otherwise, it kind of goes of the rule that if you hear hoof prints, you look for horses and not zebras. H1N1 is still likely to be less common than many of the other problems our pets can get. So we don't want to just get tunnel vision and assume everything is H1N1.
I want to just digress a little bit and talk the different species that have been affected. Now, this is a virus that's let's just actually talk about the characteristics of a virus. So viruses change, and they take on parts of other viruses, and they sort of mutate, and that's how we develop this virus that now doesn't just affect one species. Is that correct?
It is pretty much correct. It's really an issue more so with the influenza viruses, and it's similar to the human flu changes year to year. And that's not because a brand new virus comes out as far as, oh, a new one was created. What happened was the other one mutated just enough that the body doesn't recognize it as the same thing. So you have a new strain. It's not a new virus altogether necessarily. And this is pretty much what happened here. This one combined with some others, they happened to be in the right place at the right time. They swapped a few genes around and boom, you've got a new virus.
And so tell me again exactly what species have been affected.
So far, we know for sure, obviously people, because people are the ones spreading this mostly. There have been reported cases in ferrets. There have been reported cases in cats, one cheetah, and then there have been poultry reported as far as primarily turkeys and pigs, of course, because they are susceptible to H1N1 viruses of pretty much any sort. There have also been some reports out of China of dogs. No confirmed cases of dogs in the U.S. so far infected with H1N1 might be coming. We don't know for sure.
Now, there are a lot of areas in the country that have pigs that are sort of wild, I guess wild boars and animals like that. Have we found anything like that in the United States, or is that possible that they could potentially carry it or spread it?
Well, they are pigs, just like the commercial swine. So it theoretically could be possible for them to spread it to other pigs, but probably the biggest protective barrier we have there is these pigs are not very likely to come into contact with humans to the extent that they're going to get infected. I mean, the commercial swine become infected because the farmers or a farmhand or a worker were ill and handled the pigs and infected them that way.
Imagine.
You have feral pigs, they're avoiding human contact. So it's not very likely they'll get infected in the first place. And if they do, they might spread it amongst themselves. But commercial swine facilities are extremely protective of their pigs, and they don't let them come in contact with feral swine. So it's probably not a big risk. However, anyone that owns a pet pig needs to keep in mind that if they're sick with the flu, they could give it to their pig.
Wow, very important. And you know, I live in New York on Long Island. There's not very many pet pigs. But I know in the country, and we have listeners all over, that really do potentially have pet pigs. So I hope that everyone will really understand that that is something extremely dangerous. Now, how sick do they get?
The good news is most of them have not been very ill. I mean, there have been some cases that have died. So it's not something to be taken lightly, obviously. Several of the cats were pretty mildly ill. There were a few, though, that needed some more intensive care. The oxygen therapy, they were in an oxygen cage and getting higher levels of oxygen because they had pneumonia and weren't really getting enough oxygen in their system, breathing regular air. They might need some fluids, that sort of thing. But generally, most of them have responded to what we call supportive care, which is making sure that they're as healthy as possible while their body fights off the virus.
Now, I'm going to digress again because my brain is just going in all these directions. All these questions are popping into my head, and I can imagine into our listeners' heads too. Now, if poultry can get it and swine can get it, can we get these diseases from eating poultry or eating pork?
There isn't, because there are a couple safeguards in place. One is these animals, if they do get it, they are not allowed to be slaughtered for food until a certain period of time after they have been completely normal. So if they do get sick, none of them have died. I mean, the pig farms that have had outbreaks, none of the pigs have died from it. They've had fairly mild disease. They get better, and a month later, or even longer than that, they're slaughtered. So they're basically totally normal when they go into the food chain. If an animal dies, obviously it's not going to go into the food chain. So you're basically preventing it from entering altogether. Then there's another safeguard in the fact that you should always cook your food to, you know, especially any meat products, not just to protect you from a potential virus infection, but any foodborne disease. You really need to cook your food to the recommended temperatures to make sure you've killed off anything that could make you ill, whether it's salmonella or E. coli or a virus.
Right, especially pork or poultry. Those are things, yes, fortunately, that we don't have a tendency to consume undercooked or cooked less.
Yes.
Wow, so much information. We have learned so much already, and we have so much more to learn, but we have to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about 2009 H1N1 in our pets, specifically how it affects dogs and cats, what to look for, and how to prevent it, and what happens if they do get it. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Give your dog some thought with Dog Thoughts. It's the iPhone application that everyone's talking about.
What do you think of this? A man in Davis, California says he's invented an application for the iPhone that claims it can read your dog's mind. Huh? No, it's true. I read about it on my cat's Twitter page. That's why.
Jay Leno talked about it, CBS reported on it, and now you can see what all the buzz is about. Created just for dog lovers, Dog Thoughts makes taking photos of your furry best friend more fun. Shake your dog and read his mind. On your iPhone, of course. Take a pic of your pup, shake your phone, and watch as his thoughts appear on the screen. Does he have a bone to pick with you, or is he having a tail-wagging day? Get your Dog Thoughts iPhone app today. Just 99 cents. Go to PetLifeRadioPromotions.com. That's PetLifeRadioPromotions.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Hi there, we're back, and with us is Dr. Kimberly May from the American Veterinary Medical Association with invaluable information about 2009 H1N1. We used to call it swine flu, but we're not going to do that anymore, right, Dr. May?
Exactly.
We're going to call it 2009 H1N1, and we're going to learn now how we can protect ourselves and our pets from this problem. And let's discuss this in our pets specifically. What symptoms would I see if my dog or cat developed H1N1? I would imagine that veterinarians may not even recognize it. I mean, I know I always poo-pooed the fact that someone at home is sick and the dog is sick. I always called it a coincidence.
Yeah. Well, the unfortunate thing in a way about this is an animal with H1N1 infection is going to demonstrate respiratory infection. It's not going to be a classic thing. You see one sign and say, oh, this is H1N1. They're going to look like an animal with a respiratory problem. They're going to have maybe a runny nose, snotty nose, maybe runny eyes, sneezing, coughing, might have some difficulty breathing, or at least an altered breathing pattern or effort. And so that doesn't clue you in to say that it's H1N1. I mean, there's a dog flu going around right now. That if I got a dog in that was showing signs of a respiratory disease and has a history of being in contact with other dogs, my most likely suspect is going to be dog flu and not H1N1. So it's kind of what we call non-specific signs, but it has so far been respiratory illness, just like it is primarily with people.
So at least, you know, the name of it may not necessarily be important for the severity. I mean, we don't necessarily have to know exactly what the virus is, or even if it is a virus, but we're going to treat it by the symptoms. And
yeah, most of the time they're going to be treated pretty much the same. You're going to treat it symptomatically and with supportive care. Now, if they develop a secondary bacterial infection causing pneumonia or other things like that, then they will probably need some antibiotic treatment. But in general, most of the treatments are successful if you just keep them healthy, keep food in them, keep them hydrated, keep them warm until their body fights off the virus.
Right. I mean, at this point, we haven't actually confirmed its presence in dogs. So
right.
At least we have a history of the canine influenza virus, which is different from this 2009 H1N1 flu virus, although they're both flu viruses. Can
Correct.
Be very confusing.
It does get confusing. And there's been a lot of confusion in the media about it.
But there is no upper respiratory type virus, at least a newer virus in cats, although there are other things like Khaleesi, right, that could potentially be confused with H1N1. But
exactly.
Would we treat any of them differently?
Not really. Really, it's going to be determined by the veterinarian that's looking at the animal as to what they need to do with them. It's going to vary from, hey, let's keep an eye on them because they're still eating and drinking and they look fine, to, oh my gosh, we need to put them in an oxygen cage and we need to do more intensive care because they have a worse problem. So it's really going to vary.
Right. And I imagine that there's not really a test that's readily available today anyway to anybody to figure out this.
Yeah, not really. I mean, there are some veterinarians that are running some of the human bedside H1N1 detection tests. Most of the time, they're just testing for influenza A. And then if that comes up positive, they'll send it. Probably not a huge amount of value in that compared to just treating them as you would normally treat them, collect some samples and send them off to the lab. Because these bedside tests they've not been proven to be accurate for animals. So you're sort of guessing that it's right when it says positive or negative. So the best bet would be treat the animal appropriately, collect the samples, send them off to the appropriate laboratory.
And I wouldn't imagine that any laboratory could handle it. Is it only a special few laboratories since it's such a new problem?
Yeah, there's actually a pretty good sized network of laboratories, and we have on our website some FAQ document for veterinarians that has a connection to a list of veterinary labs that will run these samples.
Good. I guess I would imagine most veterinarians, including myself, wouldn't know where to send such a sample without doing that research. So it's good to know that avma.org, their website, has lots and lots of really great information, and we'll continue to mention that throughout the show today. So if there's a person in the house who has a respiratory disease, should we make sure that they keep the pets away from them and not seek comfort from them, and maybe vice versa?
Yeah, you know, it's probably ideal. I mean, we're not saying lock your pet in a room and don't touch it for a week. I mean, that's obviously not a good thing for anybody involved. But we do recommend that if you are ill, treat your pet like anyone else in your family as far as keeping some distance from them and practicing good hygiene and good sanitation. I mean, people tend to think, I don't want to sneeze on other people, but right now we have good evidence to say you really shouldn't be sneezing on your pet either. So it means keeping some distance and practicing good hygiene and good sanitation, which hopefully you are anyway, if you're ill and you're trying to protect all of your family members, whether they're two-legged or four-legged.
So we don't need to go so far as to board our animals in a kennel or anything like that?
No, not really. I mean, unless there's a person who lives alone and they really are feeling ill and they're not feeling capable of taking care of their pet, then that would be another consideration altogether. But no, I mean, some basic contact as far as feeding and petting them a little bit is probably fine. The idea would be to wash your hands before and after you pet them, ideally, and to not have a lot of close face-to-face contact. You don't want your dog or your cat licking your face when you've got a runny nose and you've got the flu.
I know, that's really sad to think that we can't have the comfort of our pets, but we definitely know that it's possible for them to get it, so we have to take those precautions, just like a baby or a small child.
And it's striking a balance. I mean, we don't want people to be deprived of the companionship of their pets when they're feeling ill and really want that. But the key is to be just to use some common sense measures and keep the contact, but also keep in mind that you could be putting your pet at risk with more intensive contact.
Right. And obviously it's very new. So I'd imagine there's no vaccine yet for pets
that is correct.
To prevent this, right?
Yes, there is no vaccine for pets.
And so the human vaccine would not be something that would be utilized in animals, right?
Yeah, it's not appropriate to use the human vaccine in any animals at this point because, one, it's not been proven effective for them, and, two, the human healthcare profession needs to focus on protecting people from this virus because people are still the primary spreaders of this virus. The pets are not the ones doing it. The pets are getting it from people. So if we can vaccinate people and keep them protected, that will help keep their pets and their family protected.
Right. So we talked about pet dogs, pet cats, pet pigs. What about pet birds?
We don't know for sure. We know that poultry have been infected, obviously, with the turkeys, but there have been no confirmed cases in pet birds, and we just don't know. Whether it's possible or not, who knows? It'd be kind of a guess at this point. But
and again,
any
very
pet.
Difficult to prove, right?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, birds can get influenza viruses. I mean, bird flu is a perfect example of that, although that has primarily been poultry as well. The birds that are commonly kept as pets, we don't really know what their risk of being infected is.
Yeah, and then I'm thinking about animals that are potentially more susceptible to disease, such as cats with feline leukemia or feline AIDS, or potentially ill for any other reason. Would that make them more susceptible to the virus?
Really, in theory, yes, it should. I mean, any time they have an illness that's already stressing their immune system, it's going to put them at higher risk of either getting infected or having worse disease. There was a cat that died in Oregon from H1N1, and this cat had severe pneumonia, severe problems, and the cat also had a history of chronic respiratory problems. So odds are that contributed to this cat's severity of illness and his death because it was already had an immune system that was kind of trying to work as hard as it could but wasn't working well and slapped another virus on top of it.
So I was curious to find out, did any of the animals that we have confirmed infection in, were any of them immunocompromised or other than the one you just mentioned with the respiratory problem?
My knowledge, no, but pretty much all of the cats that have been confirmed to be infected with the virus are older. The youngest one was 8 years old. Otherwise, they were more in the 10, 11, 13, 14-year-old range. So it does bring to mind that maybe older pets are going to be a little more susceptible to this. Otherwise, the ferret that died, I'm unaware of any other problems it may have had.
So I guess one of the things I'm hearing is that we know that there have been hundreds of thousands of people with severe 2009 H1N1, but very, very few animal cases. I guess that's a really good sign.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's the risk from two pets is obviously much lower. Even social pets are not going to interact with as many people or animals in a given day as your average person. I mean, you come to work. I come to work. There's 150 people in this building. I see probably 20 to 30 of them pretty regularly. So if one of them has the flu, I'm exposed to it. My dog lives at home all day, and he's on the sofa. You know, he goes out and does his walks, and he doesn't get exposed to a lot of animals. He gets exposed to me. So I am his biggest risk of getting infected.
Right. But I bet a lot of pet owners, even, you know, who have had it, I'm just happy to hear that even many, many pet, with all the pet owners that have had it, that a lot more animals don't have it. So that
exactly.
makes me feel that it's going to be a hopefully very, you know, spread out, isolated cases and not a large number that we'll expect to see, hopefully.
Yeah, very hopefully. And there's also a possibility. We can't deny the possibility that there have been pets that have been exposed to it from their sick owners and maybe got the virus in their system, but they fought it off without ever showing signs of illness. I mean, that's possible. And that's absolutely fine. It's just their body taking care of a virus like it should, and it's not really a cause for concern.
Right. And many people are exposed to it and don't get ill as well. So,
exactly.
Again, you know, not a reason to close down a school, therefore definitely not a reason to overreact with our pets as a possibility of possible animals to become infected or necessarily to spread. Now, how do you think veterinarians are going to react by having these types of animals in their hospital? I mean, I guess veterinarians have isolation wards for animals with upper respiratory problems, but do you think that they'll be reluctant to bring those patients in?
There may be some reluctance. I mean, the thing working in our favor is that so far there's no evidence to say these pets are spreading it to people. So, but it is just a matter of, you know what, take precautions just to make sure. Protect everybody, and you're better safe than sorry. Take a few extra precautions and minimize that risk or make it zero. So they may be a little bit leery about it, but given standards of hygiene and protocol, this should be absolutely fine. And what really is important is if the animal needs health care, that it gets the health care. That's what really counts. And the veterinarians are going to make sure that's done. If they get a pet coming in that they know the owner has been sick recently with the flu and they're worried, there, you can just take them into a certain exam room and nobody else goes in that room until it's clean. There are a lot of very simple things that can be done that should not prevent someone from taking their pet to the veterinarian if it's sick.
Yeah, except if the veterinarian is coughing and sneezing.
Well, then that's when you hope that the veterinarian and all of the staff have a good plan in place that says, hey, when somebody's sick, they stay home. And they do, because, you know, now not only do you have to worry about infecting your other staff, but you might need to worry about infecting your patients.
You really do. I mean, that's quite a concern. Now, we're talking about H1N1 or 2009 H1N1. Previously called the swine flu, no longer called the swine flu, but are there other viruses that potentially we should be concerned about that could potentially cross lines and infect people and animals?
Well, there's a laundry list of not just viruses, but bacteria, fungus, you know, all these lovely things that we share with animals. There's zoonotic diseases, which are diseases that come from animals to humans. You know, they're rabies is the perfect zoonotic disease.
Yeah.
If you want to throw up an example. So, and that's a virus. There are a lot of things we can share with our pets, and that's where it's always a good idea to practice good common sense and good hygiene. The risks are pretty low, but they are there. And so it's a matter of keeping your pet healthy, because that will decrease their chances of being ill with something that will either compromise their health or that they could pass to you. And then the other side of that is keeping yourself healthy too, decreases your chances of getting sick and also could keep you from giving things to them, because things can go that way as well.
Absolutely. So what would you say the most important messages for our listeners are right now? Clearly, we don't want them to panic. There's absolutely no reason to panic, because we know how many people have gotten the flu, how many people with pets have the flu, and how many cases have there been? Maybe 5 confirmed cases in the country right now?
Yeah, there have been, let me think about it, I think a total of about 5 ferrets and 3 to 4 cats. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking really less than 2 hands that you can count the number of pets that are infected with this. So that is a remarkably low number considering how widespread this is. And that's really, you've hit on it. The main thing is not to panic. It's a cause for concern, obviously, because it is a pandemic and it's being spread from people to people. But it's not a cause for panic when you're considering the animal aspect of this. And again, just good common sense, good hygiene, good sanitation are the best things you can do to protect yourself and your pets.
Absolutely. So you can get great information updates and the latest news about 2009 H1N1 in our pets and also about H1N1 in people by going to the American Veterinary Medical Association's website, which is avma.org. And we'll have that up on Pet Life Radio on the Pet Doctor's site as well. So you can reach that. That's avma.org. And there's a lot of links to some very, very important information. And we're out of time right now, but we have learned so much. And I can't thank you enough, Dr. May, for sharing this valuable information with our listeners.
Thank you very much.
Everyone's so happy to hear that there really is no need to panic, but it's real. And it's something that we're going to probably see again in the future, either with this influenza virus or with others, as you mentioned. And I just so happy that we can educate people about exactly what's going on. And of course, I always have to thank our fantastic producer, Mr. Mark Winter, for making this and every show on The Pet Doctor possible. If you'd like to email us, please do so at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. Remember, our lives are determined by the things we never planned, and all we can do is do our best all the time. Well, one of the things we can do to prevent flu in ourselves and in our pets is the simplest thing, is covering our mouths when someone around us is coughing. Wash our hands, guys. Wash our hands. Anyway, I'm Dr. Diane Levitan, and I thank you for listening. You'll be hearing from me again soon.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.